Good evening. Welcome to Midnight Harmony. I'm E.W. Helmick. As I travel the world, I'm often asked a question that many of you may have faced or asked of yourself. How do you know God's will for your life? This question is undoubtedly filled with theological debate and biblical ideologies, themes, personal reflection, and a good many prophets and godly men have, throughout history, tried to answer it in their own way. I'm certain there are more qualified individuals than I to answer the question, what does God will for your life? But tonight, I'm going to take a stab at the question and give you my simple answer. When I was a child, I recall sitting in my living room listening to the radio with my father. Each evening, he would turn on a program, Night Sounds, with Bill Pierce on the Moody radio program. Though I don't recall any of the topics, I do recall the music and soothing voice of the narrator, and it brought me a peace in my spirit. I watched my father after a long day of work, and he too seemed to relax and rest in the moment of conversation with the radio. Midnight Harmony desires to bring that peace to you as you listen to our program. Upcoming broadcasts are going to include inspiring stories from many incredible people I have met over the years who have overcome defeat to find themselves living in a place of joy and hope. And so as I reflect on Night Sounds from my childhood and consider the future of our program, I'm faced each day like you with current events, a job, bills that need to be paid. I thought to myself, what hope can I give to my listeners? But more importantly, can I answer that question that I'm so often asked? How do you know God's will for your life? Before we begin to answer that question, however, I wonder if we should ask a more pertinent question. What giants are standing before you that are not allowing you to live your life or follow the will of God for your life? Giants unveil themselves in many ways. Pandemics, uncertainty, rising costs, the rumor of war, fear, grief, loneliness. And these giants that enter our lives from time to time threaten our very existence. I've titled tonight's program, The Day Goliath Fell, because I believe there lies a secret for each of our hearts and future in that title. Are you somewhere tonight where you can settle in and listen for a moment or two? Perhaps you're in your car driving, in bed ready to turn out the light, or in your living room with your father, listening to the radio. Wherever you may be, I hope you can take a moment to settle in, listen, and be encouraged. I'm going to give you just a moment to find that safe and restful place and prepare your heart for a giant of a story. There's just one more thing I would like you to do as you listen. Imagine yourself standing in front of your giant. Just you, all alone. Don't be afraid of the giant. Instead, look your giant up and down. Stare him or her in the face and whisper these words. The battle belongs to the Lord. The battle belongs to the Lord. At 11 feet 4 inches, Goliath was a monstrous stature, his strength and spirit equally proportional. Art as well as nature made him terrible, for he was well furnished with defensive armor. A helmet of brass on his head, a coat of mail made of brass plates laid over one another, like the scales of a fish. And because his legs would lie most within the reach of an ordinary man, he wore brass boots and had a large corselet of brass about his neck. The coat weighed 156 pounds. Considering a shekel was half an ounce, avoirdupois, a vast weight for a man to carry, all the other parts of his armor being proportionable. Though the weight of the coat was grand, the value of it was 5,000 shekels. His offensive weapons were extraordinary, with a sword like a weaver's beam. His arm could manage that which an ordinary man could scarcely heave. His shield only, which was the lightest of all his accoutrements, was carried before him by his esquire, for show, for he that was clad in brass little needed a shield. Goliath's challenge was a simple one. He had been chosen by the Philistines as their champion, to save themselves from the hazard of battle. And so, with a voice much stronger than others, he cried so as to make them all fear him, and threw down the gauntlet, and bids defiance to the armies of Israel. "Give me a man, that we may fight together." Goliath looked upon himself with admiration. Because he was so much taller and stronger than all about him, his heart, nothing but a lump of proud flesh, was nonetheless courageous. Scanning the valley from his vantage point, Goliath looked upon Israel with disdain, because they had none among them of such a monstrous bulk, and mocked them to find a man among them bold enough to enter the list with him. Goliath was a genius at taunting his opponent. He upbraided them with their folly in drawing an army together in the first place. "Why have you come to set the battle in array? How dare you oppose the mighty Philistines? Why should the two armies engage, when the controversy may soon be decided, with only the expense of one life and the hazard of another?" Goliath offered to put the war entirely upon the issue of a duel, as he proposed an unlikely bravado. "If your champion kill me, we will be your servants. If I kill him, you shall be ours." No nation would be willing to venture its all upon the success of one man, nor would it be justifiable. The Israelites trembled, notwithstanding Goliath's stipulation here, knowing full well the Philistine would never submit themselves as servants to Israel, for Goliath looked on them as no better than slaves. Goliath boasted that he was the man that had killed Hophni and Phinehas and taken the ark prisoner, but that the Philistines had never given him so much as the command of a regiment in recompense of his services, whereas his opponent Saul, king of the Israelites, had been made king for his services. "Let him therefore take up the challenge." And so day and night, for 40 days, Goliath taunted the Israelites, and they were dismayed and greatly afraid. David was on a homely errand to deliver bread and cheese to his brothers who awaited battle. He had not so much as a donkey to carry his load, but took it on his back and ran to the camp where both sides were now preparing to fight. David, though he had come a long journey with a great load, ran into the army to see what was happening and to pay his respects to his brethren, when there on the opposite side of the valley, Goliath appeared to renew his challenge, vainly imagining that he was in the eager chase of his own glory and triumph. David observed how timorous and faint-hearted the men of Israel were. Though they had for 40 days together been used to Goliath's haughty looks and threatening language, and having seen no execution done by either, might have learned to despise both. Yet, upon his reproach, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. David resented the indignity hereby done to Israel and Israel's God, and asked those around him, "What reward was promised to him that should slay this Philistine?" David was fueled with a holy indignation. "Who is this challenger? One that is uncircumcised, a stranger to God and out of covenant with him? And who would dare challenge the armies of the living God, devoted to him, employed by him, and for him?" Being the youngest, David was chided and trampled on. His brothers were vexed that David should speak boldly and assumed he had been disobedient in leaving behind his sheep. "Thou hast come down, not to do any service, but to gratify thy own curiosity, and only look about thee," his brothers shouted angrily. With provocation and admirable temper, David replied, "What have I done now? What fault have I committed, for which I should thus be chided? Is there not a cause for my coming to the camp, when my father sent me? Is there not a cause for my resenting the injury done to Israel's honor by Goliath's challenges?" David had right and reason on his side, and knew it, and therefore did not render railing for railing, but with a soft answer turned away his brother's wrath. Furthermore, how could David quarrel with his brothers when the Philistines were upon them? At length, David was presented to Saul for his champion, and he bravely undertook to fight the Philistine, as he told Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him." David said nothing of a reward, only desired a commission from Saul to go and fight with the Philistine. His ambitions were to serve God and his country. But Saul objected, "Alas, thou hast a good heart, but art by no means an equal match for this Philistine. To engage with him is to throw away a life which may better be reserved for more agreeable services. Thou art but a youth, rash and inconsiderate, weak and unversed in arms. He is a man that has the head and hands of a man of war, trained up and inured to it from his youth. And how canst thou expect but that he will be too hard for thee?" David answered his brother's objections with passion and meekness. So now he answered Saul's fear with faith, and he gave a reason of the hope which was in him that he should conquer the Philistine. "I am not ashamed that I kept my father's sheep, but I'm no ordinary shepherd. Though they are not my sheep, but my father's, I tend them with care. I venture to rescue a lamb in distress." David applied his story like a man of faith. He stated it was the Lord that delivered him from the lion and the bear, and gives God the praise of that great achievement. And thence he infers, "He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." "The lion and the bear were enemies only to me and my sheep, and it was in my defense of my own interests that I attacked them. But this Philistine is an enemy to God and Israel, defies the armies of the living God, and it is for their honor that I attack him." Thus David took off Saul's objection against his undertaking, and gained a commission to fight the Philistine, with which Saul gave him a hearty good wish, since he would not venture himself. He prayed for him that he would go, and the Lord be with thee. The armor to which Saul tried to adorn David was disproportionate and cumbersome. I cannot go with these, for I have not proven them. I have never been accustomed to such accoutrements as these," David stated, as he dropped the armor to the ground. David grinned at Saul, who appeared perplexed and sore afraid, as he walked from the tents towards the battlefield. On the battlefield, preparations were made on both sides for the encounter. Goliath was already fixed, as he had been daily for the last 40 days. Well might he go with his armor, for he had sufficiently proved it. Being given that his challenge was accepted, he distrusted his helmet and coat of mail and approached David. But what arms and ammunition did David have? Truly none but what he brought with him as a shepherd. No breastplate or corselet, but his plain shepherd's coat. No spear, but his staff. No sword, no bow, but his sling. No quiver, but his scrip, nor any arrows, but instead of them, 5 smooth stones picked up out of the brook. By this it appeared that his confidence was purely in the power of God, and not in any sufficiency of his own, and that now at length, he who put it into his heart to fight the Philistine, put it into his head with what weapons to do it. Goliath looked down with scorn upon his adversary. He looked about, expecting to meet some tall, strong man. But when he saw what a mean figure he made, with whom he was to engage, he disdained him, thought it below him to enter the lists with him, fearing that the contemptibleness of the champion he contended with would lessen the glory of his victory. He took notice of his person, that he was but a youth, not come to his strength, ruddy and a fair countenance, fitter to accompany the virgins of Israel in their dances than to lead on the men of Israel in their battles. He took notice of his array with great indignation. Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with staves? Dost thou think to beat me as easily as thou dost thy shepherd's dog? And with that confidence Goliath presumed upon his own success. He cursed David by his gods, imprecating the impotent vengeance of his idols against him, thinking these fireballs thrown about him would secure his success, and therefore in confidence of that, he darted his grimaces as if threatening words would kill. Come to me, and I will give thy flesh to the fowls of the air. It will be a tender and delicate feast for them. David spoke next. But his speech savored nothing of ostentation, but instead derived his authority from God. I come to thee by warrant and commission from heaven, in the name of the Lord, who has called me to and anointed me for this undertaking, who by his universal providence is the Lord of hosts, of all hosts, and therefore has power to do what he pleases, and by the special grace of his covenant is the God of the armies of Israel, and therefore has engaged and will employ his power for their protection, and against thee who has impiously defied them. David spoke with as much assurance as Goliath had done, but upon better ground, for it was his faith that said, This day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand, and not only the carcass, but the carcass of the hosts of the Philistines shall be given to the birds and beasts of prey. All fell hushed across the battlefield. The ravens in the air lighted to the ground and stood silent. The Philistines and Israelites, too. At this moment in time, all the world would be made known that there is a God, and that the God of Israel is the only one living and true God, and all other pretended deities are vanity and a lie. The battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands, David's voice echoed. Is there still a giant standing before you? Were you able to see him or her earlier when we paused our program and I encouraged you to look at your giant face to face? What would you say to your giant now, after hearing again the story of Goliath and David? I want to let you in on a little secret about David that is often overlooked. God never told David to go and fight Goliath. He was never instructed to approach the battlefield, engage Goliath in conversation or debate, or in the end, fight and kill the giant. God had given David no such instruction. David acted on his own accord. Yet this is a key point, and what I hope you'll understand as I ask the question again of you. How do you know God's will for your life? On the battlefield, David didn't understand that he would one day be king, one day be revered as the man who slew a giant. He didn't know all God had planned for his life, yet he did know this. I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts. All the earth may know there is a God, for the battle is the Lord's. What is God's will for your life? God may indeed have some great purpose for your life. I believe He has a destiny for everyone, and there couldn't be anything more wonderful than living out your life in God's will. But David didn't wait for God to unveil His will for his life, and neither must you. All that is required of you is to believe there is a God, and to trust Him and know the battle belongs to Him. Stand firm before your giant as a warrant and commission from heaven. In the name of the Lord, who has called you and anointed you for a heavenly undertaking, who, by His universal providence, is the Lord of hosts, of all hosts, and therefore has power to do what He pleases, and, by the special grace of His covenant, is the God of the armies of Israel, the God of today, the God of this very night, and therefore has engaged and will employ His power for your protection against those who have impiously defied Him. The battle belongs to the Lord, and does your life, your night, and your future. The day Goliath fell, his body slammed hard against the ground, defeated, lifeless, and empty. The shouts of victory were glorious and the will of heaven accomplished. Midnight Harmony is a partner of the ministry Help World Tour and is made possible by your donation and support. Help World Tour is a global ministry that helps people make Jesus a part of their story. You can find more information about tent revivals, ministries around the world, and their motion picture, Take Your Dream, on their website, www.helpwt.com. Take Your Dream is the movie, an award-winning film that has inspired people around the world. It is the story of a father and his two sons who swam Australia's longest river to inspire a nation. It's available on Amazon Prime, and again, the title is Take Your Dream. I hope you'll take time to stream it and be inspired. If David didn't require a commission or approval from God to rise up and slay Goliath, eventually giving the Israelites victory, yet was still used by God for a very real purpose and destiny, then I think it's fair to say you too may act on God's behalf and take action. Step out in faith and confidence that God is with you and for you, and in the process of faith, may He reveal to you His will for your life. Thank you for joining me tonight on Midnight Harmony. I hope to hear from you and am always happy to have input on our program. You can write to me directly at inquiry@helpwt.com. That's through our partner ministry and producer, Help World Tour. God desires to be known and have a relationship with you. How can you go wrong if you simply put your trust in Him tonight and tomorrow step onto the battlefield in victory? Until we meet again, a peaceful good night.